ribe jeni rogu yar. Dadar da changin jeyadi lunglo dene changin jetuya meba indu zane. Eni ribe nilo dene changin jeku uri chabari.
So now, as far as the scriptures that outline the actual practice of training the mind is concerned, we spoke about two principal aspects of the path. One is the method aspect, the skillful means, and one is the wisdom or the insight aspect. Now, generally, it is the case that so far as the presentation and understanding of the method aspect is concerned, there is no real substantial differences between the understanding of these in the various Buddhist schools, between the various Buddhist schools. However, as far as the wisdom aspect, of course there will be differences. Of course there will be differences in terms of emphasis on particular practices and so on, but generally there is no substantial difference between the various Buddhist schools so far as the identification and the nature and the presentation of the method aspect of the path is concerned. But as far as the wisdom aspect and the insight is concerned, there is a real difference between different scriptures, and many of these scriptures are attributed to the same person, the historical Buddha. And so later Buddhist schools, particularly the mind-only school and the Madhyamaka, the middle way school, have developed an understanding that one must be able to distinguish between within the Buddhist scriptures of the Buddha, two categories: those scriptures that can be taken at their literal face value, and those which cannot be accepted as literal, but rather should be accepted as interpretive, which requires further interpretation, so they are non-literal. Now, then the question arises as to on what grounds can one determine whether a particular scripture is literal or non-literal, or definitive or provisional. Now, if one were to rely on another scripture to make this determination, then again the question would be raised as to on what grounds can we conclude that this adjudicating scripture itself can be taken as its face value. So there is a possibility for infinite regress. So what this suggests is that at the end of the day, or in the final analysis, one has to return to one's own understanding and experience and reason. So therefore, even in understanding the scriptures of the Buddha, according to the Buddhist teachings, application of one's critical thought and reason becomes very, very, very crucial. So it is because of this important point that the Buddha himself has said that all bhikshus and the wise people do not accept something just because it has been said by me. Rather, just as a goldsmith were to analyze a gold by burning it and rubbing it and cutting it, in a similar way, by subjecting my words to such critical analysis and investigation, you must accept their validity, not because they have been spoken by me.
Today, in this day, any dot danju chedu chave dujedi any ta omundambu chenu omundambu di thoma danju liya thesum kuduwa dot danju liya thesum che thesum ngane chaba che.
So what this suggests is that as far as the target audience of the Buddhist scriptures are concerned, one can say that there are two principal ways of approaching them. One is the intelligent way, the wise way. The one can be said to be the lesser the least better way. Now, the intelligent way to approach the scriptures and their commentarial literature is someone who approaches them at the initial stage with open skepticism, some kind of open mind, and then subjects the content of these teachings to investigation, relating them to one's own personal experience and understanding, and then as one's understanding grows, then one's admiration and conviction in the teachings, the content of the scriptures, will grow. So this is the intelligent way of approaching the Buddhist teachings. So such a person will not follow a teaching or a scripture just because it has been said by a famous master or a well-known teacher or someone who is admirable. Rather, the validity of the content of the scripture will be judged on the basis of one's understanding derived through personal investigation and analysis. So it is in this relation, there is also another motto for followers of the Buddha, which is that an intelligent followers of the Buddha, which is that one should not rely on the person, but rather on the teachings. And even for the teachings, one should not rely simply on the basis of the words, but rather on the meaning. And even when taking the validity of the meaning, one should not rely on it on simply some intellectual understanding, but rather on deep realization. So this is how do not rely on the person's fame or something, but rather on what is said, and do not rely on the words, but rather on the meaning, and do not rely on the provisional meaning, but rather on the definitive meaning, and do not rely on mere intellectual understanding, but rather on deep experiences. So this is the intelligent way of approaching the Buddhist teachings.
So I
will leave at this point today, and what I'm suggesting to all of you is that you have to remain in this open skepticism that I spoke about.
That question, the question answer.
We will now begin with the questions and answers. I don't know if anyone has collected them.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Or is there a microphone somewhere that someone can stand, use?
Not a microphone.
I'll begin with the first one. As a practice and a long-term goal, we can eliminate afflictive emotions through insight into emptiness. But when one is in the midst of anger, how can one work with it there and then?
Lord, 당군에다 지금 롱 말아야게 지가 땅아도 들어봐 지 년부터 말래 유행 봉 조인 소는 신기 아니 게임 맞아야 다시 시야 아니 지금 나 견다 태니 연배 그돈이 롱 춘주인은 애야 지금 답시 시야 애 롱 처벌 안 되나 깨알없이 답시 시하시는
Of course, here this depends very much on the individual. In the case of a practitioner who has really kind of profound experiences of realizations of the kind of things that we have been talking about, bodhicitta, the development of the altruistic intention, and also a sense of renunciation towards the worldly, mundane matters, and also some kind of deep understanding of emptiness. If the individual has these practices in a quite a profound way, then to begin with, the instances of strong emotions like negative emotions like anger and hatred will be quite rare. But even when they arise, the person is capable of instantly recollecting, sort of tapping into one's spiritual realizations, which can then immediately have the effect of kind of diffusing the intensity of the negative emotion. However, for those who do not have, just like myself, those who do not have such profound realizations, then the best method is to try to really ensure that you do not lead yourself into situations or circumstances that would give rise to such powerful negative emotions. It is generally said that for the beginners, it's far more effective to try to prevent rather than confront. And this is very much the case, this is very true. So one can, from one's own personal experience, kind of get a sense of what kind of circumstances lead to certain, these kind of outbursts of strong negative emotions. So one can ensure that one can avoid these and do not lead to that kind of experiences. And again, when you actually have kind of a strong negative emotions like anger and hatred, again, if it is not fully exploded, then perhaps there is a way in which one can kind of deal with them. But if these emotions have kind of fully exploded, then at that instance, there is not really much one can do. Perhaps the best thing one can do is just to scream one's head off.
When I was
a kid in the Nobilinka, the summer palace in Tibet, my playmates, the sweepers in the palace, they used to tell me that whenever I got really angry, they used to say, "Bite your fist." But I mean, looking back, it does seem to be quite a sensible advice, because if you actually think about it, the likelihood is that the more intense the anger is, the more intense you're going to, more forcefully you're going to bite yourself. So this will really sort of wake you up and remind you that not to be too angry.
Because pain. You see pain in nothing.
Because you will, you yourself will, experience the pain of being bitten.
So then mind diverted.
Yeah, and immediately it will have the effect of diverting your mind from anger. How do we distinguish between selflessness and passivity?
Passivity is that you mean which is
the selflessness and the
That's the Tibaja Quadi, Pajan Nobber, get a learner singing, but a ranching zing shook Jaya singing, any Chanju sing pen, champagne in Nindu Kin, Dindegaton, any ranching shook 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 전주 선바솔이야. 근데 나오냐면 로다 배숙 전부 여사리스. 님도 매도 좀 이르잖아. 라진질 님부 된다고 와. 나도 라진 님부 된다고 와. 가슴은 아주 숙 신주로. 라진질 견 통기 통기래. 라진질 양고 고르신 줘야 돼야 돼. 소순 님도 매 따라 와. 전주 선바솔 라진진 깨바니 깨바. 나 배도 때처럼 통면에 뒤다도 봐도 배 라는 옆에 왕중에게 라진질 달이야. 님부 된다고 와. 자상가 들려 님도 쉬우죽 쳐보시다 매바 용통도 와 자들이 인도선에 딘데기 님도 영애되기 라진질이야 녀부된 통내기 밑되기 샹들 두야래야 파도 매베 님도 여름아도 쿰대바다 쉬운데 와 가와빼식 말입니다
here I think it's important to understand here when we talk about altruism and we talk about thinking about others' well-being and so on you know, one should not have the notion that here, in a sense, we are totally rejecting one's own self-interest or one is totally kind of, you know, making one's own self oblivious or kind of non-existent in a sort of a passive state. This is not the understanding. In fact, the kind of altruism that focuses on others' well-being that I've been talking about really comes about as a result of a very sort of courageous state of mind, very expansive thought processes, so much so that
sense of strong self.
No. So much so that the individual is capable of challenging the self-cherishing attitude, the self-centeredness that tends to rule us, that tends to dominate our life. And in order for someone to be able to do that, that person needs to have a strong sense of self. That person needs to have a real courage to be able to challenge what seems so embedded in us. And therefore, I normally tell people that in a sense, one could say that the bodhisattva, the person who embody this kind of altruistic ideal, is someone who has a very strong ego or a very strong sense of self, because without that strong sense of self, there cannot be that kind of level of commitment and level of courage. So it's not that the altruistic intention that we are talking about is a mere passive, wishful state. This is, I think, sort of related to the same question. Your Holiness, on the spiritual path, we try to abandon self-cherishing. But in the West, many people don't love themselves, even to the point of developing depression and committing suicide. How to deal with these issues? The way in which I try to understand this whole concept of self-hatred, sort of not loving oneself, not being the self-hatred towards oneself, is that it's not that the person does not love himself or herself. I actually believe that at the root of self-hatred, there must be too much loving or too much attachment to oneself. And the expectation is so high that when that is not met, then there is immediate frustration. There is a negative dynamic.
Narrow minded sort of selfishness. That is destructive. Tad ti mev sugar mato, dunzen de ve sertişti, yaçatın bir oğlu. Majan di tungi. Anda çanjuk tünyesi tadi, kazı oraya, çanjuk di, şendür duvarla nyava kovasındı. Masa, randırla ya, çanjuk toku oldu. Doğusun diye bu oğlu sen.
I think it's very important to try to have a proper understanding of, you know, what is meant by the Buddhist teachings when they talk about dealing with self-cherishing attitude and, you know, overcoming them and so on. It's very important not to misunderstand them. What is being suggested here is not that the spiritual practitioner should completely ignore or abandon the fulfillment of one's own self-interest. Rather, what is being suggested is to overcome those narrow self-centeredness, narrow selfishness, which tends to be totally oblivious to the well-being of other sentient beings, totally oblivious to the impact one's actions have on others. So that's the kind of selfishness, that's the kind of self-centeredness that is being sort of targeted, not the kind of selfishness that seeks the fulfillment of one's interest. In fact, if you look at the very definition of bodhicitta, the altruistic intention to become enlightened, fully enlightened for the benefit of all sentient beings, even within that ideal, there is an acknowledgement that the attainment of full enlightenment is not only necessary to be of fully capable of benefiting other sentient beings, but also it is necessary for the perfection of one's own nature. So there is that appreciation of the need for fulfilling one's own self-interest. So I think it is important not to misunderstand the Buddhist teachings on altruism.
So
in fact, if what the Buddhist teachings on altruism is really suggesting, that you should totally be oblivious to your own self-interest, in fact, be totally against it and abandon it and so on, then, you know, by logical extension, that would imply that one should not also work for the benefit of other sentient beings. Because, you know, according to the Buddhist teachings on altruism, you know, one of the byproducts of working for others and helping others is that you also gain benefit yourself. So, you know, that would mean then you don't work for others nor for yourself.
And
also, if we look at the classical Buddhist literature on bodhicitta, the altruistic intention and so on, we find those that teach the Bodhisattva ideal. For example, in Maitreya's Sublime Continuum, he states that all sentient beings are equal in possessing the Buddha nature. The kindness of Buddha, the compassionate Buddha, reaches towards all living beings, and therefore the potential for enlightenment and perfection lies in all of us. Now, all of the point of bringing about all of this is to really instill within the practitioner a deep sense of courage and also a kind of a strong sense of purpose. Now, if that's not the case, then there is no need to engage in these contemplations about the fundamental equality of all sentient beings, the fact about all of us possessing Buddha nature and so on. So all of this becomes pretty pointless. In a busy city lifestyle, it's sometimes tempting to remove oneself, to go and meditate somewhere peaceful, and leave the world behind. Would you say it is important to stay with one's normal lifestyle or to give in the temptation to escape it?
다디 가사 소설 라레브레 제 둔질레베 타싱 웬베날리야 뭐나 전에게 그다음에 냠리 시샘버지가 타네 아니 남준 덴베 냠리 타겐 셔투나 뭐나 두베 견제즈버사드레 그냥 코네즈 카가레 but society in a bit p right he said dimen chic chador shin ya garosne shushu shur mallo ba chudo dile ko thago de society na deje so so ngone chi gasore society citizen yao che ya dedo chebji so so chi kaze tudu chi nga sho kong sho lia chi kaze tudu nyamlen ra chen uzu temna ti yoro
again here it depends on very much upon the individual. If the individual is a very advanced practitioner who is totally committed to a single-pointed life of meditation and retreat, then of course there could be cases where the individual should seek in a total solitude, and as the Tibetans would call, seek a life of solitude and leave the sort of abandon the world, as it were, and that is said to be the kind of highest form of spiritual practice. But of course, this is not appropriate to all practitioners, and also it's
such person very rare, and such very few,
and it's very rare. But for general practitioners like ourselves, it is far more important to be part of the society, to be an effective member of the society, someone who makes positive contributions to the society, and as much as possible integrate within one's life, daily life, practices, the spiritual practices, and find time in the morning or in the evening to do some contemplative practices and so on. That's the best way. Otherwise, what happens is that sometimes people escape from society and then spend some time and then begin to realize that actually that's very hard, and then slowly and quietly with a rather embarrassment sort of tries to sneak back into society. What type of meditation would Your Holiness suggest for beginners?
Think impermanence and the if you have some deeper sort of knowledge or wider knowledge or sufficient knowledge, then think about nature of suffering and the nature of cessation. Actually, the Four Noble Truths, that's the foundation of Buddha Dharma. So think more on these lines, rather than just visualize oneself as a deity or wrathful deity and a very busy our lip. That I think is a certain limitation. I think. Under the Amdul Lama Jigsaw Adire, nga chang 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 chang, any nyomo ma se semo se se.
An Amdo master once said that, which could be very true, when you recite mantras too much, instead of diminishing your negative emotions and thoughts, it could diminish your nails.
I see. I thought 4:30. And okay. Finished.